Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
US presidents of both parties, including Reagan, Obama, and most obviously Biden, have been eager to embrace their ancestral links to Ireland. However, the woman who hopes to succeed Joe Biden has less cause to celebrate those links. If elected, Kamala Harris's Indian and Jamaican parents would make her America's first black female president and first Asian American president. But her father has also traced an ancestral link to County Antrim-born Hamilton Brown, who moved to Jamaica, where he acquired and ran several slave plantations in the early 1800s. To explore this, we are joined by the resident historian at EPIC, the Irish Emigration Museum, Catherine Healy, who investigated the Irish record in Jamaica for a recent exhibition and on the RTE podcast, Irish Imperial Lives. Catherine, a very good morning to you. Thank you very much for coming in to us. Can we start with the personal biography stuff? What do we know about Hamilton Brown?
Hi, Philip. Good to speak to you. So as you mentioned, Hamilton Brown was an Irishman from Antrim. He was born in 1766, just outside Ballymoney, born into a Presbyterian family. And he moved to Jamaica as a young man. I should just say as a caveat, firstly, that the direct link between this Brown and Kamala Harris has not been definitively proven. It's been suggested that her ancestor could have been a different Brown, but her father, as you say, has stated a fact that they're descended from Hamilton Brown of Antrim. So Hamilton Brown of Antrim moved to the Caribbean in the late 1700s. Jamaica at this point in time was one of Britain's most important colonies. It was a colony very much run to serve the interests of a small white elite. About 90% of the population would have been enslaved Africans by the time that Hamilton Brown arrived. So he was entering an acutely unequal society, and he gradually made moves to bring himself up into that elite. He started out as an estate bookkeeper, and within a few years he had become a very substantial landowner with a number of plantations to his name, one of which he happened to call Antrim. And of course, these plantations were heavily reliant on enslaved labour. By 1817, for example, Brown had at least 124 enslaved people working on his estates. He was also a magistrate. He was an elected member of the Colonial Assembly for many years. And if you go to Jamaica today, you'll even find a town that he established, Brownstown, where his headstone still stands in the Anglican cemetery there.
Has anybody ever tried to do the maths on to what extent he profited by engaging in slavery?
Yeah, you can find these records online. University College London have a searchable database of the compensation that was doled out to plantation owners for their so-called loss of property when enslavement was abolished across the British Empire in the 1830s. So you can see the compensation that he received. It was more than €2 million in today's money. Okay. And he used those profits to reinvest into acquiring more land.
Lest anybody think that just because Hamilton Brown was a Northern Protestant that this is a Northern Protestant phenomenon, it's not. There was plenty of Southern Irish Catholic plantation owners in Jamaica too.
Yeah, that's right, Philip. One of the assumptions you sometimes hear is that Irish plantation owners must have all been Protestant ascendancy types. And of course, a lot of them were, but there were plenty of Irish Catholics in the mix too. Many of them would have had family lands seized during the Cromwellian era, and they would have seen much better opportunities for advancement in the Caribbean, even on islands ruled by the English. So you see very prominent Irish Catholic planters in the likes of Montserrat and Barbados, Antigua, some in Jamaica too. Peter Daly from Galway, for example, moved to Jamaica in the 1780s and acquired a number of plantations. One of them he called Daly's Grove after his family property in Galway. And that's not to say that a place like Jamaica was some kind of Catholic utopia. You know, Catholics would have struggled to enter the colonial assembly. They would have struggled to take up judicial appointments, for example, because of the Oath of Allegiance. But unlike in Ireland, they were able to buy and to inherit land in places like Jamaica. And when it came to other things, some of them were willing to conform to the established church, at least in public, and then practice their own faith in private if it meant getting ahead. So this is a colony that welcomed settlers of all religions. Even after the fall of the Catholic King James II, when you see growing restrictions being put on Catholics back in Ireland.
Back to Hamilton Brown, please. When slavery was abolished by the British, what is that, 1830 something? What was his attitude to abolition?
Hamilton Brown was a very vocal opponent of emancipation and of William Wilberforce, the British MP. Wilberforce was a leader in the campaign to abolish enslavement, and Hamilton Brown didn't pull any punches in speaking against his efforts in the Jamaican House of Assembly. He described Wilberforce as hypocritical, as cloven-footed. There are also records of comments he made to a Methodist missionary who travelled to Jamaica in the 1830s to observe conditions there. And this missionary had a pamphlet published describing some of his encounters. And he talks about being taken aback by a conversation he has over dinner with Hamilton Brown. He says that Brown opposed not just abolition, but even calls to just improve conditions on the plantations. Brown goes as far as to argue that enslaved people were happy and content with their lot, and that they actually had a lot of advantages compared to the poor in England. And that was obviously very far from the truth. There are plenty of writings from that time that make clear just how brutal the system was.
So a very problematic character for us to try and incorporate into our history. There is, though, perhaps mitigation or limited mitigation from another Irishman also called Brown, tasked with implementing abolition in Jamaica.
Yeah, that was Howe Peter Brown of Westport House.
Howe as in H-O-W-E.
That's right.
Interesting name.
Yeah. An interesting name and an interesting guy. He was the son and heir of an Anglo-Irish peer known as the first Marquess of Sligo. So he inherited that title after his father died, and also the massive family estate at Westport. He initially settled at Westport after a few years, shall we say, enjoying the high life. He probably wanted time to get into that period of his life, but he had some very colourful escapades in Europe as a young man. And then in the early 1830s, he gets the call up to be governor of Jamaica. Now, Brown at this point had never stepped foot in Jamaica, but he had inherited two pretty substantial plantations on the island through his grandmother, Elizabeth Kelly. She was the daughter of Dennis Kelly, who was Chief Justice in Jamaica at one point in time. So Brown and his family arrive in Jamaica in the 1830s. It's a very significant time because the Slavery Abolition Act has just been passed at Westminster. This is legislation that provides for the gradual phasing out of enslavement in most parts of the British Empire. So now you have an apprenticeship system that recategorises formerly enslaved people as apprentices. So the caveat is that these apprentices still have to work 40 hours a week unpaid, and they're bound to their so-called masters for 4 to 6 more years before gaining their freedom. And Brown was obviously himself a plantation owner, but he did come to support emancipation. And you can see in his writings that he was very unsettled at the conditions faced by enslaved workers.
But he too, as a plantation owner, presumably benefited from all of this as well.
Absolutely. This was someone, as Liam Hogan has written, who benefited from slavery from cradle to the grave. And he was reimbursed very generously for the loss of those enslaved people who worked on his own plantations.
Presuming Kamala Harris does end up getting elected, I imagine somebody somewhere is going to go and test what it is that her father has said and try and establish absolutely a link between Hamilton Brown and Kamala Harris. Would that be easily done?
The records are a little tricky in that there are quite a number of Browns. It's possible that It's possible that one of her ancestors would have had a link to a Brown, but not a familial, to this Hamilton Brown of Antrim, not a familial link. So it has not been conclusively proven thus far.
So there might still be an element of deniability here for us, but clearly this is a relationship that we need to reform and rethink all of our assumptions to how we deal with the occupant of the Oval Office.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, the Joe Biden Irish connection is a story of Irish Catholics done good in America. And this is a very different side to Irish history, and it's a side of Irish history that we don't always acknowledge, that there were Irish plantation owners, there were Irish colonial operatives who did very bad things, and this is all part of our history too.
Can we do that, do you think, without some kind of a reckoning, without, you know, looking at the accounts here and saying there are large parts of Cork and Dublin, historical Cork and Dublin, that look the way they do because of money that came from slavery from this part of the world?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, there were Irish plantation owners, but there were also Irish merchants based in Ireland who were trading with slave economies. There were Irish people at every level of the system, from ship owners to merchants to people who went over as trade agents to Africa and oversaw the trafficking of enslaved Africans across the Atlantic. And there are plenty of buildings across right across Ireland, and particularly in Dublin, that would have been built on profits made through plantations.
Catherine Healy, historian in residence at EPIC, the Irish Emigration Museum. Thank you very much for joining us with that this morning. Let's take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.